Hi there, my name is Jamie Mackay and I lead the Postgraduate Learning and Teaching programmes at the Royal Conservatoire of Scotland. The following podcast is part of a series of interviews with graduates of the part-time M.Ed in Learning and Teaching in the Arts programme. This programme is delivered on a blended learning model but can also be studied fully remotely. All participants on the programme have a role as an arts educator and the programme is designed to help them develop their teaching practice and their arts practice, and it culminates in a self-designed final project. For more information on the programme, check the website on rcs.ac.uk/med. In this podcast, I'm very pleased to be interviewing Christopher Wardlaw. Chris is a secondary school music teacher, principal teacher of enrichment, and visiting examiner for SQA courses. So, Chris, could you introduce yourself and say a little about your current role as an arts educator?
Okay, so my name is Chris Wardlaw. I am a secondary school music teacher, and I've been doing that role now for over 15 years across different high schools in the Lanarkshire area. Majority of my career, I've just been fully focused in the classroom teaching music. Over the last 2 years, I've had the promotion to principal teacher of enrichment, where I've been involved in whole school activities, some involving the arts, trying to deliver programmes of activities for young people looking at their futures and skills developments and things like that. But my main focus has been on music education for that time. During those 15 years, I've done some private tuition as well along the way. So yeah, music is my passion and it's what I love doing. And as I say, it's what I see myself doing for a long time to come.
Thanks, Chris. So when you're working with learners, what's your goal?
I think my ultimate goal is to make a difference. That's always been my goal as an educator, is to make a difference. I'm always very realistic in that not everyone is interested in the arts. Not everyone wants a career in the arts. You know, in a comprehensive education setting, you have 1,600, 1,500, how many pupils you have in the school, of which in reality, only a small percentage are going to go through with arts education all the way through to senior phase and beyond school. So I'm quite realistic that it's not about trying to make wonderful, talented musicians. It's about trying to make a difference with what I do. And for some young people, that's simply a case of building their confidence. They might not have any interest in music, but if they're quite a shy, retiring personality when they come into high school, particularly, you know, a couple of years, hopefully in the classroom with me, you know, whether they take music beyond or not, I would hope that we'll be able to make them a bit more confident, being able to speak out more, get used to performing in front of others. You know, we're not looking for your virtuoso performers, but if it's going to help them as an individual, then that's one of my key aims. Obviously, for those who are musically inclined, you know, I want to push them as far as I can go and nurture their talent, so they can have the option when they leave school, whether they want to go down the route of arts or whatever it may be. But yeah, I think that the big thing for me is just trying to make a difference with every individual. And whatever way I can do that, whether it's specifically musically based to try and make them better, whether it's to build their confidence, whether it's to help their communication skills, you know, because I think so many subjects in school, for example, you sit at a desk with the book out, and you're not actually really talking or communicating with your peers. You know, a teacher talks to you, delivers a lesson, you do the work, you have to answer a question or two, but that's basically it. And I think in the arts, we're a subject area where, you know, you need strong communication between each other. You're working in groups, you're working in teams, you're doing things together, wee bands and projects. So whether it's communication skill building that I can help with. So yeah, my main aim is to make a difference with all the young people, and whatever way is most suited to them. And obviously doing it through the arts and doing it through music is a really powerful way to do that.
So what barriers get in the way of that, achieving that goal then?
I think there's a real attitude issue, especially over the last few years, towards music and the arts. You know, you hear that phrase a lot of, why do I need this? And there's a kind of negativity in some ways for those pupils who, for whatever reason, be it culturally, be it historically through family and stuff, they just don't like music or they don't like the arts. they don't see a value in the subject, and that negativity and that attitude comes in with them to the classroom. So as much as you're trying to help them, as much as you're trying to engage them in the subject for their own benefit, sometimes they're automatically switched off just because of predetermined opinions or views on what the subject is and what the area is. You know, there's no jobs in music or whatever. They hear for their parents, or they hear on the telly, or they read, you know, I can't do a career in that. How's that going to help me get a job, being able to play, you know, this song on the keyboard? That's not going to get me a job. So I think there's an attitude, and there's that does put up a lot of boundaries, and it's very hard to knock that down, especially when they come in. And some people do come in, some young people come in with very, very strong attitudes that way of, I don't need this subject. I'm doing it because I have to, and in the minute I can drop it, I am out of here. So I think that there's a real boundary wall there, trying to engage with those young people so that they can see, do you know what? Yeah, fair enough. You clearly have no interest in a career in the arts, but I can help develop parts of you as a person through this subject. And it's trying to get them to see that. Sometimes we get through to people, sometimes we just don't. And, you know, you get people going through who will always have this attitude of, it's just music. You know, that's not science, it's not maths. They're the important ones. So, and that can come down, as I say, from parents. It can come down to the attitudes in the school. You know, and that's a very real issue, especially in the last few years. If I go back to the start of my career, I think music in particular was far more respected in a school. You know, when I was at school myself, it was the era of the school shows. Every school did the school show. It was the highlight of the year. It was the big event of the year in the school calendar. And you look at it now, and in a lot of schools, there is no such thing as the school show anymore. There is no events. There's no promotion of the arts. It's the focus is on exam results. The focus is on STEM. The focus is on other things. The arts are just a kind of a wee flowery bit on the side. So I think the attitudes among a school, the ethos in a school, can really impact on whether young people want to engage in the subject. You know, if they see senior pupils or even staff take a really negative attitude. One thing I find in particular, if we have young people on instrumental lessons with our instructors in the school, so much hassle to get out of class to come to a lesson sometimes. You know, some teachers are great and they'll go, oh, fantastic, you're playing trombone, how's that going? Enjoy your lesson. Great. Then you've got other teachers who'll go, oh, you're going to miss out. If you go to this lesson, you're going to miss out. You're not going to catch up on your homework. And far too often I have young people come to me and say they're almost scared to come to their lesson. So I think there's an ethos within a school that can make a big difference among teaching staff. Predetermined attitudes towards the subject can put young people off engaging with it, and they don't see the benefits that they can get from it.
So what strategies do you use to help you achieve your goal then, or to deal with these barriers?
So one of the things that we look at, particularly as they get through school, I produce a document about... I can't remember what I called it now. I think it was something like music. It's you can take it with you or something, or skills you can take it with you. And when we get to options choices and we get to parent information evenings, you know, I bring that document out and it goes through all the transferable skills that you can learn in music. It goes through all the things that they can enjoy, but do you know what? It's going to help them in this. It's going to help them with that. And I think it's important that parents see that, because I don't think they're as educated at times as to all the good things that an arts education can give young people and give their pupils, you know. So that was one thing I was quite keen to establish a few years ago, is create that document and just to show parents, look, like, you might have no interest in music yourself, you might have no interest in your son or daughter having a career in music, but if they study music, they're going to benefit from this and this and this and this. And whether they become a lawyer or a doctor or a chef or whatever else they want to be, these are skills that they can use in those professions. So I think awareness at a parental level is very much important. Every few years, I am forced to put emails out to staff to remind them how young people benefit from music lessons. and how it's an important thing that they are encouraged when they have a music lesson that they get to leave class and go and enjoy it. So I think that email's due soon again at the moment. But it's just reminding staff, especially when you get new staff and young staff who are new to the profession, who come in and maybe aren't as fully aware. So I think it's always good to refresh every few years, put an email out to staff to say, look, we're trying to encourage young people with these lessons. It's a privilege for them to get the lesson. They can really benefit from them, you know, support it kind of thing. So it's trying to just tackle some of the boundaries that way. And in the classroom, it really is just that, trying to convince young people and highlight to them, you know, here's what skills we're learning. You know, if we are doing an improvisation task on jazz, you know, this is about you as an individual being creative, being confident, you know, because you're going to perform by yourself. So you don't have to have confidence to be able to perform in front of other people. So it's always trying to highlight skills in a lesson, not just say, here's what we're doing. It's saying, yeah, here's what we're doing. Here's the skill that you're developing, so that they see a wee bit for themselves. Okay, this is working on my confidence, you know. But again, it's challenging. It is challenging.
So how do you measure your success then as an arts educator?
I think it's very difficult, because going back to the first question you asked, to me, every individual is different in terms of what they get out of an arts education. So I can't look at it holistically or measure it by metrics of, oh, I got so many A's or so many B's. Yeah, that's great for those young people who wanted to study music. And I can measure the metrics. Oh, I got 80% A's and 20% B's or whatever it is. Yeah, absolutely. I can measure exam results at that stage. But if we're looking at the wider aspect of all young people as they go through the broad general education phase of their school life, it really has to be taken on an individual basis. And knowing the people, I think knowing that, you know what, and I like to put it in reports. When I'm doing parental reports, I like to put, you know, they've really built their confidence this year, or they're answering questions far better in class. They're communicating better. So for me, the measuring stick for me is very much pupil by pupil. Have I managed to help that pupil? If I look at a pupil and I go, right, they could do with more confidence. They could do with, you know, being able to share their opinions better. Or they are really clever and they know the answers, but they're just a bit timid to how to get out there. How can I help them with that? So I think when it comes to the end of a year, or it comes to report time and I'm writing reports, that's really how I start to measure myself, by evaluating, well, how has that pupil developed in the areas where I feel they are weakest? And have I been able to improve them that way? So yeah, it's a tricky one. I say it's not as simple as percentages or whatever else. I think the way that I approach arts education as an individual, for every pupil to get something out of it, whether it's a musical aspect or whether it's a skills aspect, I think it comes down to evaluating individuals. And I say parental reports and parents' evenings are quite good for that, because that is when you're summing up, well, here's how they've progressed in that time. Yeah, here's what they get better at. So is it straightforward? No. It's not a straightforward process to evaluate impact of success. I think it's being very self-aware, being very good at evaluating the young person and evaluating yourself, and taking that on board for every individual. What could I have done more with that pupil? What could I have done more with that pupil? Or that pupil's worked really well with, you know.
How would you describe the ideal relationship between you and a learner then, or your learners?
I think I've always had the opinion that teaching a performing art, the relationship with young people is different from pretty much any other subject. And I've had that conversation with other teaching staff in other subjects. They don't have anywhere near the relationship with young people that I do. I think you're asking young people to do things that they're not comfortable with. It's not in their comfort zone. to be able to perform in front of others, to be creative and improvise, to do performances in general. You're asking a lot of young people things that really scare them. And to be able to do that successfully, you have to have built up a strong level of trust and respect for that young person, because they need to feel comfortable doing it. They're not going to feel 100% comfortable doing it, but they need to feel comfortable. And at least, you know what? He's asked me to do it. I like my teacher. I got on well with him, blah, blah, blah. I'll do it for him, or he's convinced me. So I think the level of relationship with young people, it has to be, you know, you really have to work at building their trust and their confidence, so that when you do ask them to do things that are not in their comfort zone, that are not things they feel naturally inclined to do in terms of put themselves out there, that they are in a room where they feel comfortable, that they are in a department, that there's an ethos of, do you know what? You can just have a go. Everyone tries their best here. And I think that's something that I try to do, is create that ethos in my classroom of, you know what? If your best is here and someone else's best is way up here, I don't care. Because if you do your best, I'm delighted, and I'm not going to be angry, or I'm not going to criticize you, I'm not going to shoot you down. And I try and establish that from day one in first year. You know, as we're doing taster courses of all different instruments, I'll say to them, do you know what? Have you ever heard me try to play trumpet? You'd run a mile. But I can play a lot of other things. But I always try my best. You know, we're not always going to be good at everything. And I think trying to get that across to young people of, look, this is a safe environment. Do you know what? Coming out your shell, coming out that comfort zone into that area, that zone that just is going to challenge you that wee bit, it's something you can do here. Maybe when you go up to maths or science or history, you have no hope of ever doing that. You do not want to come out. You don't want to answer questions in class. But see, when you're down in my classroom, you feel safe. You feel comfortable enough that, do you know what? I can do it here. So it's just about creating an ethos, an environment for those young people where that relationship is there, that you know, you can have that very open and honest communication with them, that there's a respect there, and they know you're only trying to help them. I think one thing that for me personally, I always say to the kids, I'm very blunt and honest, and they know that from me. So they know, see, if I give them praise, they've really earned it. I hate false praise. I think it's so overused in our profession. I don't think there's anything wrong with constructive criticism. And I think praise when it's due is really important. And I established that early on with young people, that, you know what, there's going to be times I'm going to tell you, do you know what, let's work on that. That could be better. But they know, see, if I say, well, that was good, you see the smile come on their face straight away, because they know if they're getting a good from me, it's like, oh, they've nailed it. You know, so I think, again, it's just building that ethos and that environment where they want to do it. You know, even if it's the only place in the school they want to do that kind of thing, come out their shell, it's trying to get that there.
What job title are you most comfortable with?
Well, that's an interesting one. So I get student teacher a lot. And one of the first questions, this is going to sound horrible, one of the first questions I ask a student teacher is, are you a musician who teaches, or are you a teacher who teaches music? Because I think there's a big difference in my head. And it's always interesting to me to what people's opinions are. And to me, I see myself as a teacher who teaches music. My job is teaching. My job is education. I try to get young people to learn, develop, and progress. My medium for doing that, that allows me to do that, allows me to get them better, etc., is music. So I have always put the teaching bit first in terms of my role, because I think that is what we do first and foremost. When we step in that classroom, yeah, we're playing music, yeah, we're teaching music. But again, it goes back to that thing I said at the start. What's my aim? My aim is not to create thousands of top-notch musicians. My aim is to let young people develop individual skills, develop themselves through music. And it's why I see myself as a teacher who teaches music, because first and foremost, I am a teacher. And I always find it interesting, and I do see a difference sometimes in students and young teachers who come into the profession, who they'll quite openly say, no, I'm a musician who teaches. And I can see a difference in their approach. And not to be critical, but at times I think their focus is not as much on the individuals as learners. It's more on, let's try and get into be good musicians. To me, you're never going to get a full class who want to do music, but you are going to get a full class who can benefit from the skills you get through music by teaching it in a certain way. So that's how I look at myself.
Yeah. And what three values are central to your practice as an arts educator?
I think honesty. I think it's really important in the arts. I think honesty with yourself in terms of your practice, honesty with the people you work with in terms of their progress and how well they're doing and performances and things. So I think honesty, and whatever way you look at honesty, is a really important thing. Even when it comes to self-evaluation, it's just being really honest with yourself about, do you know what, that was a terrible lesson, or that performance was great, but you know. So I think honesty is something really important for me. This is one of these ones I was prepared for now. That's such a tough question to think, just to narrow it down to just three. Key values. I think respect very much. And I think I kind of alluded to that earlier, where even though there's that relationship of you're the teacher and they're the pupil, in a situation where you're asking them, you know, to come out of their comfort zone and do various things, I think there needs to be that mutual respect. Even though we're on two sides of the fence, as it were, or two, you know, other sides that cross the river, one's a teacher, one's a pupil, there needs to be that mutual respect. I think more so in our subject than any other, because of what, you know, as I said earlier, you're having to rely on young people wanting to come out of that comfort zone, or at least being willing to come out of that comfort zone. And they're not going to do that if they don't respect you the same. You know, if they don't think that you're actually looking out for them or your best interests at heart, then why are they going to do it? So I think respect is key. So honesty, respect, what's the third one going to be? Could you read the question again? Sorry.
So yeah, the question was, what three values are central to your practice as an arts educator?
I'll be honest with the kids, building that respect. And I think kind of going hand in hand with that is trust. Which I think relates to the respect element of, by building an ethos in the classroom and the department where they trust you. And do you know what? There's probably times when they absolutely 100% naturally doubt everything you're saying, but because they trust you. And I experienced that a lot, actually, when I'm thinking about it now. As the young people get to like senior school with me, there's a heck of a lot of trust. We're picking like repertoire and stuff, for example. And I'm like, no, you're doing this song. And they're like, well, but I don't really like it. And I said, no, you will do well with this song. There's no argument, because they're a trust there of, I've got their best interests at heart, I know what's right for them. So I think building a trust with young people in the job is really important too.
Okay, thanks for answering that on the hoof there. difficult to narrow it down to three specifically. Okay, so here's another question that might get you.
Oh.
If you could have a mentor from any time in history, real or fictional, to support your arts education practice, who would you choose?
Do you know, I'm going to take a really safe option here. I would prefer someone who's done this job for a long time. I think experience in this job is priceless. I think it doesn't matter if you're the most amazing musician, because some of them are the most woeful teachers. It doesn't matter if you're the best teacher, because sometimes their musicianship falls short. You know, I think there's a balance there. I think someone who's been doing the job for a long time has seen it, done it, bought a t-shirt. They are the people who have the most value to impart. And I've been very, very fortunate in my career. I would say two people in particular I can highlight that I have had the privilege to work alongside, both of whom at the time were 1 or 2 years off retirement, had done 30, 40 years in the classroom. The knowledge as a young teacher who at the time working with them maybe was only 2 to 4 years out into the profession. What I learned from them, just through casual conversation, just through wee tidbits and wee stories, has proven far more valuable to me, even to this day, than some expert theorist or some phenomenal musician. Because these people that I'm talking about, they've been there. They've done it. They know it. And it's something that I think is the most important thing, that especially coming to teaching profession, that there is someone that you can go to that has the experience, has the years of doing it, that knows things. Because it can be something as simple, you know, you've got a particular pupil or a challenging situation, what do you do? Well, who's going to know best? Someone who, do you know what, see, in the X amount of years they've been doing this job, they've probably had a very similar pupil at some point, and they've tried this, this, and this, and here's what worked. So here's some strategies you could try. So if I had to pick one mentor, well, I've been fortunate, I've had two already. And I think that has made me a far better teacher, learning from two people, Jim and Anna, as I'll call them, who, just as I say, even, you know, giving them a lift home at night, so we used to car share, and sometimes just the stories, and you just pick up so many wee things that years down the line, something happens and you go, oh, I remember Jim talking about that, and here's what he did. So if I had to pick anyone, it's people that I've worked with who have masses of experience. And I say there's two, there's Jim and there's Anna, who to this day, you know, they're both long since retired, and I still meet up with. I still, every year, we'll catch up with, go out for dinner, whatever it may be. And I still see them as my mentors, even though they've left the profession many years ago, because the wealth of knowledge that they have cannot be touched, you know, it is by anyone else, you know, regardless of what situation you're in. So maybe it's an easy answer out to say that, but for me as an arts educator, the best person I have ever had and could ever ask for, people who've done the job for a long time.
Yeah, yeah. And if you could ask them one question, what would it be?
I probably have asked this question, but I'm trying to think what they would have asked them. That's a really, really tough question, because there are lots of things I've asked them. one question that I'd ask them, anything at all about anything. Do you know what? I'd probably ask them, how did you sustain it? Because I think the job, you know, if you're in the teaching profession, you're probably going to spend 30 to 40 years. You know, I can remember I was 21. You know, by the time I retire, I've been doing this job for a long time. I think I'd probably ask them, how do you sustain that enthusiasm? How do you sustain the passion for doing it over that time and make sure that you're always challenging yourself, but at the same time, always enjoying it and that kind of thing.
And how do you think they would answer?
Well, I think possibly that. Well, I'll tell you how, because it's a phrase that Jim used to use all the time and I use all the time myself now. And that is, every day is a learning day. And if you're not willing to come into your work to learn, you might as well stay in bed. And he always used to use that phrase, which I loved. And I see myself using that phrase all the time now. And arguably, that kind of was one of the reasons why it led to me doing the master's degree, because I wanted to continue to develop learning. So yeah, every day, that's actually what he said. Every day is a learning day. And if you're not willing to come into work to learn, you might as well just stay in your bed.
Excellent. Thank you, Chris. Final question. Is there anything else you'd like to say about your arts education practice?
I think now more than ever, we need the right people in the job. We are going through a time, you know, as we go into the endemic, if you want to call it that now, where the arts have taken such a hit that people's attitudes towards them have evolved, and people, how they interact with it has changed. Whether that change is permanent or, you know, semi-permanent for the foreseeable, it's had an impact on the arts and people's attitude towards arts education. And I think especially in education, you know, we are getting hammered just now with STEM. We are getting hammered just now with, you know, here's a perfect lesson. You do this, you do this, you do this, you do this, which is great. And it works for most lessons, what I would call book lessons and other subjects. If you come to my classroom, do my lessons look like that? No. Do I get better exam results? Yes. Just saying. I think it's, we're in an era of education that really is not benefiting the arts. And we're in an era where there's pressure on positive destinations. And you know what? Sometimes if you're in the arts, there isn't a very obvious positive destination straight away. Cost of living crisis. People want permanent, reliable income. Do you know what? Sometimes working in the arts doesn't give you permanent, reliable income. So how are you trying to, you know, you're trying to teach young people who maybe want to go there, and all they're getting from everybody else is there's no money, there's no reliability, there's no permanent income. I think we're at a stage just now with arts education that we're fighting for it. It's there, it's not going to go away, but we're fighting to get the respect back, to get the meaning back. In many ways, to get it back to the heart of what education is, especially in high schools. You know, I always think the arts should be at the heart of the school. It is a key skill development. It's a key transferable skill part. It builds so many things that help other subjects. It builds the ethos of the school. And yet, it's at a stage where, but it's not a priority. You know, you look at so many schools improvement plans, and it's science and it's maths and various things. You never see the arts mentioned, even as part of the process of how we improve other parts of the school. So I very much think we're in an era of arts education where we have to have the right people in the jobs, fighting, promoting, and, you know, striving to make the arts what it should be again. And I think that's a real huge, huge job for all of us involved. And sometimes I kind of feel that some people come into jobs in arts education and maybe don't realise the fight they're coming into or the battle they're coming into. And they maybe don't put up the same fight that some of others have been doing this longer, who have seen what it should be and where it can be. So I think it's trying to make sure everyone who's in this job realises, you know what, if you want this to be a long-term sustainable thing for their success, and that actually, most importantly, the young people we are working with get somewhere with it if they choose to do this, then we have to fight the good fight. We have to promote, we have to battle to make arts of value to people out there. You saw comments during the lockdown about jobs and things and how the arts is so low down in the ratings and all this kind of stuff. That is our job now. It's not just teaching young people or teaching people in general about the arts. It's then also at the same time, I think at the moment, our other role is to then be promoting it in so many different ways. So the job's hard just now. The job is hard because we are constantly up against it at times, especially in sort of school settings. You know, you're fighting for funding, you're fighting for support. To get the artists up there against your sciences and your health and well-being and your literacy and numeracy, you know. And I think it would take some, you know, some change even at the top level. You know, the Scottish Government, you know, their national priorities in literacy and numeracy and health and well-being, you know, there's never any mention in their documentation the same way of the arts. You know, I think there are a lot that could improve in the country in terms of arts education. It's not going to happen overnight, but I think part of our job now is to keep pushing, keep chipping away in any way we can to make the general public, to make politicians aware that, you know what, this matters.
Chris, thank you so much for your answers. I've really enjoyed hearing your responses to the questions.
Thank you.
And it's been a pleasure having you on the podcast.
Thank you very much indeed.
For more podcasts in this series, go to portal.rcs.ac.uk/arts-educator-interviews.